either have a very good meeting or we won't have a good meeting, and maybe we won't even have a meeting at all.
The U.S. president sends his CIA chief to meet with Kim Jong-un. This is Thursday, the 19th of April, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Join us. Do it now at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the Japanese prime minister visits the U.S. president, trying to make certain his country's difficulties with North Korea are made evident if the Trump-Kim meeting does take place. Tributes and memories after the death of one of the most popular U.S. first ladies. All on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump confirmed that Wednesday his CIA director, Mike Pompeo, held a secret meeting in Pyongyang with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. On his Twitter feed Wednesday, Trump said meeting went very smoothly and a good relationship was formed. Details of the summit are being worked out now. Denuclearization will be a great thing for the world, said the president, but also for North Korea. Trump had said Tuesday that the United States and North Korea had talks at the highest level without giving any specifics.
We are in very close communication and coordination with South Korea with their upcoming meetings and even their current talks with North Korea. The war has never ended. If we can do something even before the meeting, the big planned meeting, that would be fine. But we're dealing very closely with South Korea. They're the ones that came and told us about the original meeting, that they want to meet with me, they want to meet with the United States specifically. We have not picked a site yet, but we've picked five sites where it's potentially going to be. We'll let you know fairly soon. And let's see what happens. We'll either have a very good meeting or we won't have a good meeting. And maybe we won't even have a meeting at all, depending on what's going in. But I think that there's a great chance to solve a world problem. This is not a problem for the United States. It's not a problem for Japan or any other country. It's a problem for the world.
Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, told VOA's Victor Beatty the latest developments offer hope, but he remains skeptical of North Korean intentions.
The South Koreans seem to want a deal pretty badly, and the North, one is always properly skeptical. But this is going to require the Americans to play along as well. So the Americans are going to be very careful to make sure that nothing that the South and the North don't agree to something that is going to put some distance or some really serious friction between the United States and South Korea, because that is the key to everything. If there is going to be a successful outcome, is how to finesse the need for the Americans to get directly involved, reach a deal with the North Koreans, while also making sure the South Koreans play the proper role in all of this. So it is a very tricky thing to pull off. I remain to be convinced, given past history. But nonetheless, it is a sort of a very interesting development, a very interesting change. So one shouldn't be too optimistic about the outcome. But nonetheless, if somehow the Moon administration can find the North Koreans in a mood to make a deal, and that's always questionable, then the Americans are sitting back right now waiting to see what develops and whether or not there's something they can also sign up for.
Would both Koreas benefit from an end to the Korean conflict?
I think in general, but that really does depend on the North. South Korean governments have tried their best to placate, offer things to the North, offer food, fuel, money in exchange for really a change in North Korean behavior. And it really is up to the North to decide if they want to end the war and to really create something different on the Korean Peninsula.
What do you make of the reports now confirmed by a senior administration official that the Director of Central Intelligence and likely soon to be Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with Kim Jong-un in North Korea just a few weeks ago?
One, it's good to see the CIA can keep a secret. Plus, you have within Mike Pompeo, you have an administration that is not desperate to reach a deal at any price. I would suggest none of this would have come about if it wasn't for the Trump administration's uncompromising and forceful approach towards North Korea over the last year and a half. But really what remains to be seen is whether or not this leads to anything. And we should know within 6 months or so whether there any grounds for optimism were justified.
Grant Newsham is not one who believes Kim Jong-un, a third-generation North Korean leader, is any more committed to peace and reform than his father or his grandfather. He said the younger Kim has brutally solidified his power, eliminating any potential rivals, presides over a regime that has concentration camps, and treats the general population cruelly. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Aid agencies race to strengthen fragile shelters in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, as monsoons are forecast to hit overcrowded Rohingya refugee settlements as early as next week. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi addresses his country's rape epidemic Wednesday, asserting that rape should not be politicized and that recent sexual assaults have shamed the nation. Officials in Afghanistan say a top regional security commander and several of his bodyguards were killed in a bombing attack in southern Afghanistan early Wednesday. And Japan and Malaysia signed a defense equipment deal. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. As President Donald Trump explained what appears to be movement toward a meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, he was starting a visit with Japan's leader at Mr. Trump's Florida home. VOA's Jesse Susiman Oni reports the Japanese leader expressed a desire for Japan's interest to also be on the table during the upcoming talks.
Japanese Prime Minister Abe, visiting Trump for 2 days of talks on North Korean policy and trade issues, praised the developments.
At the planned U.S.-North Korea summit meeting, which will be held for the first time, my hope is that there will be tangible progress toward resolving the outstanding issues of concern, including nuclear issues, missile issues, as well as the abduction issue, which is the Japanese top priority issue. So this will be a historic meeting, and I certainly hope that there will be progress on these fronts.
Abe's visit comes amid strains in U.S.-Japan relations over Trump's decision not to grant Japan a waiver on new steel and aluminum tariffs, as well as mounting concerns in Tokyo that Trump could make a deal with North Korea that would jeopardize Japan's security.
He wants to go home with the reassured sense that United States and Japan do continue to share the priorities when it comes to North Korean issues, that they share the threat perception, they share what their ideas about how this current problem will have to be resolved. And then I think Prime Minister Abe especially wants to make sure that United States remains committed as ever on the denuclearization of North Korea.
Experts say Abe, who has forged close ties with Trump, hopes to use his influence to secure Japan's interests.
For Prime Minister Abe, it's very important that he's able to sit down with President Trump before the meeting with Kim Jong-un and make sure that he understands very well what issues are important to Japan and what issues, what principles are top in Japan's interests.
Trump assured Abe that the issue of Japanese abductees held by North Korea would be on the agenda during any potential meeting with Kim. Jesse Semeoni, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Pakistan's former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif left for London Wednesday ahead of a looming verdict on corruption charges. China conducts war games, with Taiwan being the apparent target. And a rematch is likely in Indonesia's next presidential election. Stay with us with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Top U.S. political figures are paying tribute to former U.S. First Lady Barbara Bush as a woman who is devoted to her family, her country, and the public good. President Trump praised Bush, who died Tuesday at the age of 92, as an advocate of the American family. He said that amongst her greatest achievements was recognizing the importance of literacy as a fundamental family value that requires nurturing and protection. He said she will long be remembered for her strong devotion to country and family, both of which she served unfailingly well. Former President Barack Obama said he and former First Lady Michelle Obama will always be grateful to Mrs. Bush for the generosity she showed to us throughout our time in the White House, but we're even more grateful for the way she lived her life as a testament to the fact that public service is an important and noble calling. Former President Clinton, who defeated Bush's husband, former President George H.W. Bush, when he ran for re-election in 1992, said Barbara Bush was a remarkable woman. She had grit and grace, brains and beauty. And former President Jimmy Carter and former First Lady Rosalynn Carter called Barbara Bush the matriarch of a family dedicated to serving. VOA's Michael Brown has more.
Barbara Pierce Bush was the U.S. First Lady in the early 1990s, when her husband was the country's 41st president. She also later became the mother of a president when one of her six children, George W. Bush, was elected in 2000.
I had trouble when I was married to the president. And now to see that same fella that I used to drive around in Little League carpools and I used to yell at to please pick up his room, to see him as president, it's truly amazing.
She was known for her relentless loyalty.
I hated it when anyone criticized my brilliant husband, and I furious when they criticized my son.
But to play.
Often described as humble, her biggest legacy is how she advanced literacy, says professor of history at Houston University, Nancy Beck Young.
Arguing the importance of reading and writing, and that everyone should be given those skills to read and write. She argued on numerous occasions in the White House that the ability to read and write would determine whether or not an individual suffered from other social ills.
The Barbara Bush Foundation for Family Literacy, that she started nearly three decades ago, says it raised more than $110 million to create or expand literacy programs throughout the U.S. She also published books.
One while she was in the White House, Millie's book was told from the perspective of her Cocker Spaniel, Millie, about life in the White House, and she donated the proceeds from that book, around $1 million, to work on behalf of literacy.
The matriarch of the Bush family was born on June 8, 1925. She's been married for 73 years to the man she got engaged to right before he left for the war.
I would stand there and look out at the blackness of the sky, and I would think about friends I lost, a country I loved, and about a girl named Barbara.
She faced tragedy when one of her two daughters died of leukemia at age three. One of her granddaughters said on Monday, the world was a better place because Barbara Bush was in it. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia. University of Virginia political science professor Larry Sabato told VOA Mrs. Bush left behind a rare legacy in American politics.
She had bipartisan support. It's something that we've lost in American life and American politics. She was active at the highest levels of politics for six decades, which is really remarkable to think about. And she participated on a daily basis in 16 campaigns by her husband and her two sons, George W. Bush and Jeb Bush, 16 campaigns. She knew politics. She knew government. And she managed to pull off her role as First Lady in an exemplary fashion. She has been one of the most popular First Ladies, both during her term and afterwards. I think Americans certainly mourn her, but they're also grateful for her very special niche in history as only the second American to be both the spouse of a president and the mother of a president. In private life, she became popular with Democrats. She became good friends with Bill Clinton, for example, and also with Barack and Michelle Obama. It's no secret that she was not a fan of Donald Trump, either before he became president or during his presidency.
This news alert from VOA Asia reports that China has set up an English language website urging citizens to report on foreign spies. A shark attack halts an Australian surf competition. Thailand wants tourists to help it fight sex trafficking. Scientists say global warming has forever changed the Great Barrier Reef. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. China said beginning Wednesday it was imposing steep anti-dumping deposits on imports of U.S. sorghum, a cereal often used as livestock feed, as the U.S. announced plans to penalize common alloy aluminum sheet imports from China because they're being subsidized. They are the latest signs of trade tensions that have slowly escalated since January's U.S. decision to levy duties on imports of solar panels and washing machines. In the midst of all this, China Tuesday said it will end the limit on foreign ownership of automotive, shipbuilding, and aircraft industries. Scott Kennedy, director of the Chinese Business and Political Economy Project at the Centers for Strategic and International Studies, told VOA the decision by Beijing to end limits on foreign investments should be welcomed.
I think it's broadly positive for the auto sector, the companies in it. Certainly, these are things that the U.S. has been expecting China to do and hoping they would do for a long time. There will be some benefits to a few automakers in the short term. I think people have mentioned Tesla, but I think actually Ford is a potential bigger beneficiary because they had signed a joint venture agreement to make electric cars, and they might back out of that now and go forward on their own, whereas Tesla is having challenges manufacturing in the United States, let alone China, where they've never operated before. For the sector, it could be positive, but because they're implementing it gradually, this change in the investment environment in China, and they haven't coupled that with changes to China's tariff schedule. Exporting to China is still going to face a 25% tariff. If they did that, then it would be a much bigger boon for the U.S. auto industry. I still don't think it changes the overall dynamic in the U.S.-China trade relationship and the path that we're on towards greater trade tension.
Scott Kennedy said these Chinese pronouncements appear to reflect a change brought on by tougher Trump administration trade policies. He said the Chinese calculus seems to be to give the U.S. greater market access in industries Mr. Trump has a soft spot for. But Kennedy said he believes the U.S. administration has broader concerns about Chinese industrial policy, and that will take a lot longer to resolve. This news alert from VOA Asia, U.S. President Trump confirmed Wednesday his CIA director, Mike Pompeo, had held a secret meeting in Pyongyang with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. China flexes its military muscle in waters near Taiwan. President Trump said again on Twitter Tuesday that he does not like the landmark Trans-Pacific Partnership deal for the U.S. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the term fake news is heard a lot these days, especially from President Trump, other politicians, journalists, and also posted on social media platforms like Twitter. Some high school students in the United States and around the world are getting a better understanding of fake and real news by learning literacy media skills in the classroom. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to a high school in Arlington, Virginia.
18 times.
Here at Wakefield High School in Arlington, Virginia, these seniors are learning to identify false or misleading information.
What's the big deal about people being misinformed?
Social studies teacher Patricia Hunt is using a digital course called Checkology to give students real-world examples of news and information that is either factual, misleading, or just plain false. Take February's high school shooting in Parkland, Florida, where 14 students and three teachers were killed. She asks the students to think about whether the rumors that swirled after the shooting were actually real.
Students are bombarded with information, and they are also bombarded with so-called news, fake news, viral rumors, and misinformation. My hope in my lessons is that they will be able to identify quality journalism when they see it, and they'll be able to identify unfair, unbalanced, fake propaganda and the like when they see it too.
Studies have shown that teens get most of their information from social media, and they are more likely to believe the information they get from their friends. Ellen Miller is the founder of the nonprofit News Literacy Project, which includes Checkology.
I've really been struck by how students tend to see all information as created equal. If they're younger, they may think that if somebody put it on the internet, they verified it and it's all true, and they're inclined to believe it and to share it. By the time they're in high school, they're often more cynical, and they may feel that it's all equally driven by bias, by agenda. What's missing is that critical thinking skill to know what to do with all of that information.
This student plans to look at social media with a more critical eye.
Now I know how to decipher what's real and what's fake and what to look for.
What we want the students to take away is the ability to assess the credibility of all news and information they encounter.
And it seems to be working.
I learned about fact-checking and ways to find false news, you know, like by headlines and seeing if there's publishers.
I think I'll be able to kind of go through news a lot better. I'll be able to kind of rest easier knowing that I'm not going to be tricked as easily.
Thousands of educators are using the digital Checkology courses in the U.S. and in 90 other countries, helping students recognize for themselves
fake media, fake news,
if what they are hearing or seeing is true or not. Deborah Block, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
Where did you get that information?
As we continue on VOA Asia, rural communities in the United States and elsewhere often use portable backup electricity generators in case of power outages. However, these machines can be very costly to run for longer periods of time and require periodic attendance. VOA's George Pudich reports a team from West Virginia University is developing a small natural gas-powered generator that will be able to run for years.
This simple-looking machine, displayed at the recent energy-themed exhibition organized by the U.S. Department of Energy, has only one moving part and can generate about 1 kilowatt of electricity, enough for basic power requirements of a single-family home. The lead investigator of the linear generator project at West Virginia University, Professor Parviz Famuri, says their first objective is to build a machine that can run continuously for 10 years.
The other objective is to run on 40% efficiency from natural gas to electricity. And the third is it should be lower than $3,000.
As the piston of this small two-stroke gas engine goes up and down, it also pushes and pulls a permanent magnet through a coil of copper wire, generating an alternating current. The motor does not have a crankcase, and the piston is pushed back to its upper position by a compressed air spring at the lower end. Famuri says the generator can also run on various types of fuel.
Not only we ran this on the natural gas, we also ran this on diesel. So it's a multi-fuel system.
Since the gas engine also generates heat, Famuri says it could have a dual use.
Basically, with the combined heat and power, you can put this in your HVAC system, your heating and air conditioning system, and that would the heat would provide for the heater, and then the electricity would provide for the home.
The project is still in the experimental phase, but Famuri says the prototype should be ready in about a year. George Pudich, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our listeners throughout Asia, including listening to Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines and Radioactive at Thammasat Polytechnic in Singapore. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.